Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Good Radio Network, radio that does a world of good. This isn't your average talk radio show. We're blasting away the old tried and not so true mold. Instead, TGRN turns talk into action. And action leads to doing positive things for people, our environment, and even the animals.
Well, I'm only one person. What can I do?
A lot. Join host Frankie Picasso while she turns talk into doing and gets results. This is the Good Radio Network. Yes, you can do it if you try, even if you're just a regular guy. Now, here's your host, Frankie Picasso.
Hello, and welcome to the Good Radio Network, radio that does the world of good. Wherever you are in the world, I welcome you to the show. And if you're listening in live, I encourage you to join the conversation. We'd love to hear from you. And for those who are downloading the archive version, thank you so much for listening in during your leisure time. We really do appreciate that. As you know, the Good Radio features stories and guests that are positive in nature. And before I introduce you to my lovely guest today, I just wanted to share this positive minute with you. Leon Logothetis is on a mission. He is riding his yellow motorcycle, which he calls Kindness One, and he's attempting to travel it around the world on nothing but the kindness of strangers. So no money, no food, nowhere to stay. He's counting on the generosity of the human spirit to keep him going. He says so far he's met with success in Las Vegas. He's originally from London, I should say, England. In Las Vegas, family gave him a food and a place to sleep. In Nebraska, the cowboys let him stay with them on their ranch. He says American people have been absolutely fantastic. Now in Pittsburgh, after a dozen people turned him down, he met Tony, a homeless man who shared his food and offered to let him sleep with him in a dilapidated garage. He said, it was so inspiring and so humbling for me that the people in Pittsburgh hadn't really helped, and this homeless gentleman offered me a place to stay. He said he gave me food, he gave me clothes, and he inspired me. Now, I think that this is the perfect segue to introduce you to my guest, who is Denise Sandoval. And Denise is the founder of Lavame, a San Francisco-based nonprofit that converts public transportation buses into bathrooms on wheels for the homeless. And she's driven by a fierce belief that everyone deserves the right to be clean. And she was inspired to build Lavame after learning about the appalling lack of showers and toilets available to those experiencing homelessness across this country. Now, before tackling the issues of homelessness, she worked for both public and private sector organizations, utilizing her extensive background in public relations, marketing, and branding. And she's worked in the arts as head of marketing at the San Jose Museum of Art, as chief external relations officer for Zero One, an organization dedicated to showcasing the work of some of the most fertile minds from the world of art, science, design, architecture, and technology, which I think we can put her into that category now. And some of her other clients include Coca-Cola, Infomix, and DoubleClick. Please welcome Denise Sandoval to the Good Reads. Hello,
thank you,
and welcome.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I read your story, and I thought, man, the stars were lined up big time for you. But I want to start at the beginning, and because I really like people to help our listeners know how you take an idea and move it forward. So I really want to get to the place where inspiration, that day where inspiration struck for you, Denise. Where did the idea of Lavame come from?
Well, as you mentioned, I learned about the fact that there were 16 shower stalls for 3,500 people actually living on the street in San Francisco, and it floored me. I just thought, oh, my God, you know, this is a first world country. This is one of the most affluent cities in the world, and we cannot provide basic human rights for all of our citizens. That was just so, so wrong in my mind. I also, at the time, I had a crazy fixation for all things mobile food. And so I thought, you know, if you can take gourmet food and put it on wheels and take it anywhere, why not showers and toilets? And then, you know, talk about kismet. Literally 2 weeks later, I happened to read an article in the San Francisco Chronicle, which is the local paper, that was talking about the federal government providing millions of dollars in grants to the transportation agency here to replace the older diesel buses with the new hybrids. And all the bells went off in my head. So it was an idea that, you know, sometimes it's luck, it's timing, and it all came together. But it was also sort of really driven by you have to have this crazy tenacity to get a wild idea off the ground, tenacity in a way more than anything else. And for me, it's a sort of a very personal thing. When I was growing up, around the time I was 16, my dad was an entrepreneur who had wild highs and devastating lows, and one of them actually almost found us homeless. I think if my grandmother, who didn't have very much herself, hadn't been a lifeline for us, my family could easily have been on the streets. And that sort of, I guess you could call it kind of a pain point in my own life, is what has helped me power through at times when it's felt just overwhelming and completely undoable.
You know, I feel this kinship with you. And one of my mantras is from great American poet Theodore Ratke, who said, "What the world needs now are more people who specialize in the impossible."
And
I love it. Yeah, it's like this huge challenge. And like my dad, also an entrepreneur, always said to me, he goes, "You know, dream big. Why dream small? It takes the same amount of energy." And you know, you're a big dreamer. And most people would think, "Wow, that's a great idea, but how the heck do I accomplish that?" You know, okay, so now you're going to get the buses, but the buses cost what, $75,000 each?
That's a lot of money.
How much were the buses? Did they give you the buses?
Most cities, surprisingly, have donation programs for the buses that they're retiring. It's kind of a little-known fact. Not every community, but a great number of them, at least in the U.S., and if you reach out, you know, then you can find out, oh, yeah, if I'm a nonprofit, then I can request a bus.
Wow. So you also ran across a young woman on the street, didn't you?
Yes.
Said something about, what did she say exactly?
She was sitting on the side of the sidewalk and basically was saying over and over again that she would never be clean. And in that moment, I realized two things. One, that what she said probably had a lot of meanings that I would never fully understand, but two, that I never thought about what the resources were for homeless individuals to actually get cleaned up. And so that's what drove me to go and do the research that night.
Yeah, because it's pretty amazing that you know, all of the shelters and all of the places that homeless people could even go into, you said that even some of those places didn't even have bathrooms or shower stalls.
Most have bathrooms, but showers definitely are in short supply. Even some of the shelters who have showers frequently have maintenance issues. They're not always functioning. And then there are also, you know, multi-shower stalls in one unit. So if you're a woman or you're LGBTQ, the incidence of attack is incredibly high. So there are a lot of people who even just avoid using showers in shelter facilities because they're worried about whether or not they're safe.
Right. You know, a while ago, a couple of years back, I received a video from a group in Washington, D.C. There were a group of homeless people who had been putting I can't even remember the name of the man who put it all together, but they did a video, and it was very funny, and they did it tongue-in-cheek because they wanted people to understand how difficult it is to go to the bathroom when you're homeless. You know, nobody wants you. McDonald's doesn't want you coming in and using their bathroom facility. And, you know, the restaurants down the street don't want you. And yet you get arrested if you defecate on the park, you know.
Right.
They don't want that. So human biology, you can't hold it. Or, you know, where do people expect them to go?
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah. It's a big issue. There was a period of a few months here where almost every major blog and publication you were picking up that was local was talking about the poop problem that San Francisco had, but it's also because we just don't have a lot of public bathrooms and, you know, a lot of private establishments just don't welcome homeless individuals. So exactly, you know, what are your choices? You're forced to do one of your most intimate functions, you know, in public.
Right. And that's one of the just absolutely beautiful, you know, thing that you're doing for these people is just absolutely amazing. Now, you, young lady, you have been recognized by some pretty amazing people, but you won the Google Impact Challenge. And tell us about that grant, because you actually received $100,000, and they grant upwards to $500,000 to nonprofits with bright ideas for a better Bay Area. So how did that come about? Did you know about that in advance, or
Yes, we actually did apply. We thought our chances of winning were pretty slim because we hadn't even launched our pilot. We were still just an idea. We hadn't gone through the proof of concept phase. And when we won, we were thrilled because it was a huge, you know, acknowledgement of this concept that we were putting out there, and it helped us close the funding gap so that we could indeed get our pilot off the ground. So it was an amazing experience. It was also happening at an interesting time because with the growth of the tech industry in San Francisco, what has happened a lot is even if companies aren't necessarily moving in, employees are moving in because they want to be part of the culture and dynamism of the city, but they might be commuting down to San Jose. So tech companies had started running a lot of commuter shuttle buses to reduce the number of cars on the street, make it easier for their employees to get to and from work, so on and so forth. But it's caused a huge backlash in the city of a lot of private citizens, you know, being really angry about these Google tech buses or Yahoo or, you know, Electronic Arts. And so when we got this Google Impact Challenge grant award, you know, there was a lot of great press about how Google was doing something positive with the bus and really making a difference and, you know, being a true community partner rather than just a usurper of all things San Francisco. And so, you know, it was beneficial to us, but I think they got a little bit of a halo from us for their regular shuttle buses.
Yeah, okay, nice. Now, I read somewhere that, and I think that this is pretty amazing, and I have to say, if you haven't looked at Denise, Google her because she's absolutely stunning. So you've got this beautiful woman who wanted to feel a kinship maybe with the homeless, and you decided not to bathe for a week. Tell us about that experience.
So to raise money for our first bus, I wanted to use crowdfunding, primarily because I wanted to demonstrate that it was grassroots support from just everyday people who really believed that this was something important to provide for the homeless community. And in that process, you know, I realized that while I, you know, had this deep passion for what I was doing, I really had no clue what it was like not to be able to shower whenever I wanted to. And while it was a sort of very limited experience, because at the end of the day, I came home to my nice house and my nice warm bed, I still had to go 7 days. I opted to go 7 days without showering. If you know anything about me or you know me for a short period of time, you know that I am like, I'm such a clean freak, that it was incredibly difficult for me to do the 7 days. And when I finally got in to take a shower, I got under that water, and I literally cried because the feeling of washing everything away, all that it means symbolically and literally, is very powerful. And I think all you have to do is think about a time in your life when maybe you're a big camper and you go away and you come back, and that feeling that you get is just so vital, reconnecting you with yourself, and how much we define ourselves by, you know, what we look like, what we smell like, how that makes us feel. All of those things get impacted when you can't get clean. So in a very, very small way, I got the opportunity to touch the same, you know, feeling that the people we're trying to serve grapple with every single day.
And what about the people around you? How did they, were you treated differently?
Well, no, I wasn't, except by my daughter, who's 8 and basically has no filter. And so I came home one day and she's like, "Oh, Mom, you just look and you actually smell a little gross." Like, thank you. All my attempts at layering on deodorant and using body wipes didn't seem to be working well
that
enough.
French bath doesn't really work that well, does it?
No.
So you would use wipes like some of the homeless would use, and it just,
yeah.
I can just imagine, at least it's grimy, filmy.
Yeah, it's a disgusting feeling. It feels like you're just moving the grime around. It doesn't really leave you feeling clean and fresh.
And were you allowed to brush your teeth?
Yes, I let myself brush my teeth because, you know, I am out there trying to talk to donors and
right.
people like that, and I didn't want to bowl them over on every front.
Yeah. Well, because it's actually an interesting experiment when you think, because a lot of times, you know, we don't want to smell them and we don't want to look at them because they look dirty and that kind of thing. And so when you talk about the opportunity that bathing brings, let's talk about the challenges that they have and about the opportunities that just having that shower, other than being clean, brings.
Right. So I think really first and foremost is connecting people with their dignity. I mean, if you could imagine even just sleeping on the street one night, just what that does to your morale, to your sense of self, and you layer on not being able to get clean, you pretty quickly get disconnected from your sense of worth and your sense of humanity. And a shower can bring that back to you. I mean, every time I'm out there with a bus, I see one person that get on, take a shower, and a totally different person come out just from the ability to be able to get clean. So there's that restoration of dignity, self-worth, and a sense of humanity. Then what we also do is we help eliminate any obstacles. So if you're actively trying to look for work, or in the case of many of the people we serve, they have jobs. But in a city like San Francisco, where evictions are just going like wildfire, where people can't afford to pay for the rising rents, a lot of people we serve are living in their cars and sometimes in what's called SROs, which are single-room occupancy hotels that might have, you know, one room to, like 15 rooms to one bathroom, and those bathrooms are horrible. So they look to us to help them maintain their hygiene. But so we help people keep their jobs. We also help them maintain health if they've been sick, or a sense of well-being. And so I think that these things are really vital, to the first step up and out of homelessness as people are attempting to, you know, transform their lives.
Let's go back. This is very interesting because I was not aware of this, and I find the idea that the employed who are sleeping in their cars because of rising rent are among the homeless, because we don't think about those people being homeless. We think about people, you know, who maybe made a decision to be on the street, maybe couldn't work, maybe had some mental health problems. But these are functioning people with families even who are being evicted. This is
right. So one of the things that we're going to be working to do through a new project that we're launching that kind of just goes hand in hand with what we do, which is called, it's called Coming Clean, but it's a storytelling project, because what we realize is that if you say homeless, the first thought that comes to most people's mind is someone who may be on the street intentionally, who has serious mental illness, who's an aggressive panhandler, those kinds of people. And in truth, they represent very small numbers of the homeless, like maybe 20% of these individuals are on the streets for long periods of time and have these big issues that have led to chronic homelessness. The vast majority of homeless, at least in the United States, 80% are homeless temporarily, and they're homeless because they lost maybe a healthcare safety net and ended up getting really sick, or they got laid off from their job, or they are employed but they can't afford housing. The vast number of women who end up on the street are escaping homes because there's domestic violence. And so there are a whole host of reasons that that we need to change the perceptions of who the homeless are. There are a lot more, just like you and me, maybe only two or three turns of bad luck away from having radically different living experiences than we have right now.
And how many families have you come across?
We have seen, I think we see about 30 families regularly, and that's about to increase dramatically because we're going to be opening up service for a particular, what was a temporary shelter that is now turned into a long-term shelter because of the need. There are about 50 families there with 80 kids that we are going to be focusing on providing showers for on a weekly basis. So, you know, that number is growing. The good news is that in San Francisco, for sure, there are a couple of amazing organizations that are really working to end, you know, family homelessness. One of the groups that we love is the Hamilton Family Center, and they do amazing work. And I think that they are on the cusp, potentially, of, you know, ending family homelessness in San Francisco in a couple of years. There's also some amazing groups doing work around, you know, housing veterans and ending veteran homelessness. You know, but this is a process that takes a while. And in the interim, you know, we want to fill the gaps where there are no opportunities for people to get clean.
You know, it's interesting. I was in a really bad accident a number of years ago, motorcycle accident, and I'd broken both legs and hip, femur, everything. And I had a nurse come, home care for a day, and she came really late in the day, and my kids were at school, and I hadn't eaten or gone to the bath or anything. And she came and she said, I'm just here to clean you. And she goes, how often do you like to bathe? And I said, I like to bathe every day. She goes, oh, I only come once a week. And it was like, that was a shock to me. What? I'm only going to get clean once a week? You know? That was a shock. And here, you know, the folks that you service would be like, oh, thank God I get to get clean once a week.
Yeah, such a difference. Exactly.
Such a difference. So what about the schedule? Now, you have one bus and the second on the way. Is that correct? Do I have that right?
Yes, we are hoping to get the next bus out by the end of July, early August at the latest, and then the final two buses hopefully this year as well. It all, you know, it always depends on fundraising.
Sure.
And so the more successful we are, the sooner we'll get those out there.
Okay, and so Lava May, the bus, how many volunteers does it take to run what your program right now?
It depends what neighborhood we're in. So the Tenderloin, which is in sort of it's the neighborhood with the largest number of homeless individuals out on the street. It's also a neighborhood that's challenged in many ways, you know, riddled with more crime and drug use and things like that. So in that neighborhood, we operate with a few more volunteers than we normally do. So we have one staff person who's the bus driver and the project coordinator for the services, and that person then works with anywhere from, we can do as few as three volunteers in a very sort of mellow neighborhood, and in a neighborhood where there's a lot more activity and a lot more need for just, you know, special support, we operate with five. What we do is called hospitality rather than human services. We try really hard. I mean, we created something that we think is beautiful. We went through a whole design process, you know, talking to homeless individuals about what their needs were, what their concerns were, and that shaped our design, and we worked to make something really beautiful. When they come to us, if they've been to us once, we know their name next time we see them. If we see them again, we know their stories. And so we really try to work to ensure that they leave feeling better than when they came. So we're trying to sort of, you know, be a service that really sees people and not just, you know, treats them like another number running through the system and thank you very much and next kind of thing, because we feel that there is kind of a special sauce in being able to have a human connection with every single person that comes through and uses our service.
So is there a time limit?
Yes. We started when we began our pilot at 20 minutes, and then we found that a lot of our guests, so, you know, your story about the gentleman who's doing the motorcycle ride and his meeting Tony in Pittsburgh, we find that so many of the homeless individuals we work with are so generous, and they're so conscientious of the fact that there are so many people that need this service, that they really, really work to, like, get in there and get out as quickly as possible. So after a month or two of doing 20 minutes, we narrowed it down to 15 minutes. And so at that, we are out there essentially 5 days a week, 6 hours a shift, and we can do about 42 showers in a day. And that allows us to do a quick cleaning in between to make sure that everybody gets a clean shower when they go in.
Right. And is that what the volunteers, like, you'd have a driver and a cleaner?
So our volunteers do everything from we use a smart waiver, a digital release of liability waiver. Just, you know, it allows us to say, if you slip and fall, you won't sue us. But it's also a way for us to capture their name, where they showered with us, how many times they've showered with us, and a few bits of demographic data so we can understand more about who we're serving. So there's someone who's doing that. There's someone who's greeting people. There's someone, sometimes people who are capturing stories. There are people who are cleaning for us. Then if there's any sort of extra time, we ask our volunteers to, you know, pick up trash in the area so that we can be really good neighbors to the businesses and residents who are in a particular area that we're stationed at. So there's multiple roles.
And so if I was to come, I would get screened. You'd ask me my name and whatever. Now, toiletries are on board. Towels are on board.
Yes. So we have a wonderful partner in Dr. Bronner's. They provide their all-in-one wonderful lavender soap. Our guests love it. We also have a partnership with, I think they're national here, they're called Laundry Locker. They not only donated our towels, they've been doing laundry service for us. So we provide all of that to our guests. And then when they leave, when we have them, we have little hygiene kits that we can give away that might include socks and razors and other toiletries for them to use in the interim.
Yeah, I was reading on one of those sites, I can't remember which website, but some and gentleman was saying, you know, we need socks.
Yeah. Socks is actually one of the number one most requested items. Sometimes people wear them for so long, they literally have to be peeled off their skin.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Wow. it certainly is a different life, isn't it?
It's mind blowing. Yes.
You know, when did you decide homeless people? That's who I want to serve. When did that?
Well,
come?
Like I said initially, you know, this is an issue that sort of triggered something in my past. And I think, you know, I had been living in New York. I mean, I've been in San Francisco since 1986, but living in different parts of the country and the world at different times. In 1990, well, I can't even remember the dates anymore, but around 1999, I moved to New York and stayed there through 2002. So September 11th happened, and that really was a sort of a life-changing experience for me. A year later, I moved to San Francisco, and I was just so astounded at the number of people who were living on the streets. I mean, it was just really shocking by comparison to, say, Giuliani's New York, where they had pushed everybody out of Manhattan, and you almost never saw a homeless individual. So there was that happening. Secondly, I passed that young woman. And then we also moved into a neighborhood that at the time was, you know, this older historical neighborhood that was middle-class African-Americans. My daughter was 3 months old. I was taking some downtime, and we got to know so many people on our block. And quite a few of the older African-American single men we have seen over time get evicted from their apartments, start to live in their cars, lose possession of their cars, end up on the streets. And we've been trying to help them all along the way, and then we would lose track of them. I mean, we were assuming that they might have passed, but it was so heartbreaking to watch, you know, as their lives spiraled downward and to feel completely incapable of making a more impactful contribution to their lives. And I racked my brains on how I could end homelessness, since I didn't have millions and millions of dollars to create housing. When I met the young woman, the shower idea seemed like a good start.
That's a great idea. So fantastic. Wow. The and like I said at the beginning, the stars lined up for you.
Yes.
You know, to get that grant, to get everything. Wow, just incredible. Just went out of my head. I'm so sorry. Wanted to ask you about the your recognition award, the Toyota Mother of Invention Award. Wow.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
That was completely, that was just a total surprise. It came out of nowhere. I got contacted, I think it was back in October or November of last year, by a woman who works for Tina Brown Media. And I thought, oh, they want to do a story on Lava Mae. Okay, sure. And they kept asking me, you know, are you going to be in San Francisco in, I think it was February? And I said, yeah, as far as I know, my schedule is clear. And, you know, then they kind of went off the radar for a while. First of the year, they came up and said, hey, we have this date, and da-da-da-da, and are you free? And this is what's going to be, a little salon. And so I'm thinking, great, you know, perfect. And then they call me, oh, and we want to do a video in advance of you. So it kept getting more and more, you know, complex. And so I show up that night to this salon, and there's all this press, and there's all this, you know, I'm being pulled here and there to have photos done. I get to meet Tina Brown, who's lovely and amazing, and I'm taking all these photos with her. And then when it's my turn to go up and do my segment of the salon, afterwards they say, oh, please don't leave. And the representative from Toyota comes up and announces, you know, that I've gotten this $50,000 grant and the Mother of Invention. It was just absolutely astounding and just such a wonderful, thrilling thing. And then even more so, I got to participate in Tina Brown's Women in the World conference in New York this past May, and that was just so inspiring. All the women doing such incredible, life-changing, world-changing work.
I know, it's absolutely amazing. Did you ever think, you know, as a little girl, gee, I'm going to do something and everybody's just going to be blown away by it?
No, not in my wildest dreams. No.
That is so cool. So when the bus, how many stops would it have around the city?
Right. So the way we operate is we choose a location a day. When I first thought about this, I was thinking, you know, one of those, you know, British double-decker buses, and we put showers on the bottom and haircuts on top. And, you know, in the 6 months that I did doing the research and talking to other nonprofit service providers, they're like, oh, no, keep it simple, keep it simple. And so we actually just have two full bathrooms on the bus with shower, toilet, sink, and changing area. And this allows us, even though we could have put more on there, this allows us to meet two of the big requirements or requests that we heard over and over again in talking to homeless individuals. And that was one, for privacy, because if you're homeless, you're living your whole life in the public eye. And the other was safety, for the reasons I mentioned before. And so, you know, what I realized too was that I had never really worked with the homeless population, and what we wanted to do was make sure that we're doing what we did well. So we always go out and partner with another nonprofit serving the homeless. And what this allows us to do is pull up either in front or very nearby. They manage the shower list, so they're reaching their guests and anybody who walks in has heard about Lava May and wants to take a shower. And we ask people to wait on site at our partner site so that way we don't have people standing in line, because if you're homeless, you're always standing in line for services. And then we also avoid congestion on the streets so that we're not negatively impacting the neighbors in the areas where we are. So it's one partner per day, a totally consistent schedule so that people know where to find us.
Okay. And have you had any negative reactions from anybody that's
Very few. I mean, very few that we've encountered face-to-face. I mean, always when there's an article about us in the newspaper, you know, in the comment section, which I've stopped reading, you'd get some really crazy stuff. But, you know, we've had a couple of people who are like, we like what you're doing, just don't do it in our neighborhood. So it's what we call here, not in my backyard, NIMBYism, which has happened a couple of times. And we definitely have had the one or two people who walk up and say, I can't believe the city lets you use water to shower the homeless. Like, okay, or that you're using my tax money to pay for this. And the best part about that is that we are totally privately funded. So we aren't using anybody's tax money to do what we do.
It makes you wonder if they want to take out guns and just push everybody off the Bay Bridge or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, we definitely have gotten, you know, you should just use your buses to ship all the homeless out, right? So, but I would say that is a very small minority compared to the number of people who really support what we're doing. Even people who don't necessarily support overall homeless services, they understand the value of hygiene and how that connects to dignity.
Right. And more. Let's just reiterate, we are speaking to Denise Sandoval, and her foundation is called Lava May, which means wash me. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you can be reached at www.lavamay.org. Denise, what are the rents like in San Francisco? I know that California in general is pretty expensive wherever you live, but like, we're talking about these folks being evicted from their homes. Like, what kind of rents are we talking about compared to the rest of the country?
Well, there was an article last year that came out and said that it would take about 5 to 7 minimum wage jobs to afford rent on a 2-bedroom, 1-bath apartment in this city. So that's pretty astounding. A 2-bedroom goes easily, depending upon the neighborhood and the amenities, how many bathrooms, anywhere from maybe $3,700 to, it could go well over $10,000 depending upon the neighborhood that you're in.
Oh, but my gosh.
It's an incredibly expensive city to live in, and it's very difficult.
I'm just saying, my son has this beautiful little 2-bedroom apartment, you know, and with parking, and it's $750.
Right. Well, yeah, I grew up in Texas. I go home to Texas. I see my parents. I see rents, and I'm just like, wow, you know, it's another world entirely. You know, this is a small city. It's 7 by 7, 47 square miles, and essentially there's not a lot of place to add additional housing, and we have restrictions on, you know, height limitations for buildings. So the demand exceeds, you know, what's available, and that's pushing rents up higher and higher. I mean, this is a city essentially where, you know, the middle class is beginning to disappear because they can't afford to live here. The people on the lower rungs are getting pushed out and ending up in really precarious situations like their cars or the SRO hotels. And the upper, you know, affluent individuals are, you know, are growing.
Was it in San Francisco trying to make it the tent city that the homeless could go and live?
So there was a gentleman by the name of Greg Gopman, who 2 years ago came under fire. He's a tech entrepreneur. He came under fire for saying some very negative things about the homeless. And then he sort of went off the map and did some soul searching and connected with, you know, a homeless organization, I think, down in San Jose, and sort of re-educated himself and came back and is now a huge advocate for creating, you know, a tent city. I think it's probably very unlikely in a city that doesn't have much real estate to be able to dedicate to a tent city.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know how feasible that is.
But they stay. The homeless stay in the city. Well, part of them work there. But could they not move out a little bit? Like,
so there isn't really anywhere in the Bay Area anymore to move to. Everything is getting more and more expensive. So as the city gets more expensive, more and more people move across the bridge to Oakland, which is becoming, you know, like Oakland is like what Brooklyn is to New York, and it's becoming uber trendy and more expensive. So it's, you definitely can't go north because north, the immediate north, is has always been very expensive. And then you go down south to Silicon Valley, and even though, you know, arts and culture there are limited to certain spots, it's an incredibly expensive market because you're competing with technology employees who can pay much higher rent. So it's a really difficult conundrum for what people can do. We have people who talk about, okay, I'm going to try and save as much money so that I can move completely out of here, but they're just barely staying alive, you know, as it is, and what they have, so the ability to save is incredibly limited. And then even if they are able to save enough, there's always the question if they leave here, like go to the Central Valley where unemployment rates are much higher, their chances of finding a job, you know, are reduced pretty significantly. So it's this really unfortunate catch-22 right now.
Wow. Very sad. But I always wonder why people don't leave, you know. If you're not employed
right.
and you're not, and you're just there, and the chances of you making, having a job where you're going to make $10,000 a month that you can afford to pay on rent seems pretty slight.
Right.
You know, I'd get on my little horse and run away.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, unfortunately, poverty in America, period, is on the rise. It is the working poor are a growing number of Americans. And so people's chances, they're just, they don't look very optimistic, you know, saying, oh, I'll just leave isn't necessarily a panacea for the problems that they're facing.
So I know that you do have partners and other nonprofits and other businesses. So is this something that you tackle with them, this idea of where can people go or how can we help the homeless find housing? Is this something on your radar?
Yes, absolutely. I think the idea around, you know, how can we collectively, you know, bring our voices together, first of all, to lobby local government to create more affordable housing, and the mayor is responding. There is an effort to push forward more affordable housing. It's also around supporting groups like the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness, who's working to end evictions, which are, you know, one of the highest or one of the biggest reasons why young families are ending up on the street is because of evictions, and they're working to change that, and so sort of supporting that so that we keep people housed and we have prevention of homelessness. You know, it's just like with healthcare. You can prevent something rather than dealing with it once it happens. It's so much more effective. And so, yes, you know, at the end of the day, you know, my voice contributing to, like, how can we house and how can we help it isn't, I don't know how effective that is other than supporting efforts that are already on the ground. Like I said, it's a small city, so figuring out how you create housing for so many people when there is, like, not enough housing even for, like, the middle class is an incredibly
right.
challenging problem.
Yeah. Abandoned buildings, things like that.
Yes. Yes, or, you know, school properties that have not been in use and, you know, converting those. So there are ideas out there, and we definitely work to lend our voice to making those changes or, you know, spurring local government to actually, you know, move forward with every single one of those opportunities so that we can reduce the number of people on the street.
Especially the families, the kids, I mean, it's terrifying for children.
Oh my gosh, yeah, and the impact is long-lasting. I mean, the research shows that children growing up in homeless conditions, they suffer serious amounts of PTSD. It also has physiological ramifications. Kids end up, it impacts their growth rate, their intellectual development rate. So there are all of these bigger problems that develop as a result of, you know, having a child who's homeless.
Yeah, let's talk about the all the people around the world who see this and go, "Wow, we want our own lava mate." And some of the technology that you use in the retrofitting can really help people in countries where water is scarce.
Right. So what we're hoping to do is in 2016 launch Lava Mate Global. And we are working out what that strategy looks like right now, whether it would be an affiliate strategy where we would go in and create an online toolkit that people could access for free and, you know, go step by step through the process that we went through, including all of the, you know, mechanical engineering and any technologies that we used and making that completely available for free, and then, you know, potentially providing leadership support and then training for the service team once they're ready to go so that they can see how we engage with our guests, or, you know, whether or not we're looking at creating Lava Mate branches. So it would make sense potentially to do like Lava Mate San Jose, Lava Mate Oakland, Lava Mate Palo Alto for a start, because it's easy for us to reach those areas and kind of control the growth of those particular offices and services locally. So, you know, it's trying to decide that. But we're already sharing what we have with different groups from, you know, as close as San Jose to as far away as Chichén-Itzá, Zimbabwe. So, you know, when people say, hey, could you share your bus design with us? Our answer is always, you know, yes, here are the plans. And, you know, call us with, you know, any questions as much as we can help. We're really trying to focus right now on codifying our model and to stay really focused to make sure that we get everything right locally so that when we share a model, we know that it's been tested and is a good model that other people can replicate.
What's been the biggest challenge?
Oh, at different times, it's definitely been different things. You know, back in the day when I was starting, before the pilot, it was finding the fabricator to gut and retrofit the bus. I had contacted bus conversion companies that were all over the country, and some of them were super interested and then would just drop off the map. And I thought, oh, this is definitely a bad sign. You know, while they're trying to woo my business, they're disappearing, which is not good. Secondly,
no.
If they were too far away, you know, you can't do quality control. I wouldn't be able to get there on a regular basis to kind of talk through design issues as they happened. So that, I think, was one of the biggest, hairiest monsters that we had to tackle. And fortunately, we sort of had a local guardian angel who connected us with a company who's in Sacramento, which is about an hour and a half away. And that worked out really well. Recently, we've had to do a little dance with the Public Utilities Commission, who had granted us a temporary permit to dump our gray water because we don't have capacity on the bus to store all the gray water. And we don't have capacity to recycle it because of some of the restrictions in San Francisco around recycling water. And so, you know, walking through the whole process with them about how we can't capture the water. And San Francisco has a very unique dual storm drain sewer system, which is why dumping the gray water back in is not problematic. And so, you know, getting them back on our side and seeing that we've looked at sort of every other solution and that this was the most viable, that wouldn't put us out of business or tax us financially, and, you know, getting them back on our side. So every time you turn around, there's a new little thing that pops up. But
yeah,
we just sort of bear down and realize that at the end of the day, what we're trying to do for people is much more important than the small obstacles that we encounter along the way, and we're just determined to overcome them.
Good for you. Yeah, the unstoppables. when you think about, as a city, you know, we don't like homeless laying on the ground and people having to step over them and things like that. But at least if people are clean, then hygiene and disease and worries about that, I think, you know, can be a leap, and you know, you do help people get back to work or at least find a place to live when they're clean and presentable.
Right.
People are more receptive to them, obviously. When they bathe, is there an opportunity to wash their clothes or to put clean clothes on if they don't have clothes? Is that something, like, could the buses have a little wash machine dryer so that they just zip through the stuff and give it back to them, way to go, or...
Right. We did explore the possibility of putting washer and dryer on. First, we had space constraints, which limited that. Secondly, if you think about how long it takes to actually wash your clothes and dry them, we would be, you know, holding people up for a really long time, and trying to schedule that between showers for other people was really complicated. So one of the things we found out is that 90% of the guests that we shower have a couple of changes of clothes. Very few people have no options. And so when that happens, we also have a relationship with St. Anthony's, who does a clothing exchange program. And so we can work on behalf of our guest to set up an appointment for them to go and get clothes, so they can basically hop to the front of the line instead of waiting in line, go get a pair of clothes, and then come back and change with us. The kind of distressing need for clothes is more around undergarments, which people don't tend to have access to new and clean undergarments. And once we are more established and settled in routine and aren't still, you know, climbing so many mountains, my goal is to be able to find partnerships with manufacturers and get seconds on underwear and T-shirts and socks for both men and women, and to package them in small, medium, large, and extra large men and women, so that when people come to us, we can give them a change of undergarments, so they don't have to think about it. Because we find sometimes, actually, often on our buses, even when people have a change of clothes, we go in and we clean in between, and there will be fecal matter, and it's not because anybody, you know, went to the bathroom on our floors. It's because they're taking off undergarments that they've worn for way too long, and unfortunately, you know, that's the choice that they have.
Yeah, you know, I know that you know I did a show a little while ago on undergarments, and that when, you know, women who run from situations of domestic abuse usually run without anything, their clothes on their back, and take their clothes and go. And so the need for undergarments is huge. And, of course, that's not something that people tend to donate. You can't donate used underwear. So you have to buy it and give it away.
Right.
And so that's less likely that people even think of doing that. So it's, you know, is one of the, and socks, like we said, you know, is one of the two most underserved garments that people really, really need. So if you're listening and you want to help, you can do that. And that's the other thing, Denise. If people want to get involved with Lava May, or what can they? Can they? Can they help?
Absolutely. So, obviously, money. It costs $7 to shower each guest that comes through. So $7 provides a shower. So if, you know, making a donation and you think you don't have a lot of money, it only takes $7 to make a shower possible. For the listeners who are in the Bay Area and actually want to volunteer on site with our services, with our buses, you basically can just contact us. If you go to our website, lavamae.org, there is a link for how you can volunteer, and there are volunteer shifts that you can sign up for. And then for people who are more remotely, who have skills like marketing, finance, you know, graphic design, things like that, and want to pitch in, you can send an email to info@lavamae.org and say, hey, this is my skill set and I've got some time. Do you have anything to work on? Because you don't have to be in our backyard in order to make those kinds of things happen.
Right.
So,
right.
Yes. And then, you know, follow us on Facebook and Twitter and, you know, help us get the word out when we do have calls for things like socks and toiletries and whatnot. And that would be fantastic.
Awesome. The $7 donation, how can they donate? Do they go to your website, or is there a place?
There's a big donate button on the top of our website. There's also a button, donate. There's one for donate money, and then there's one for donate goods. We have a great partner named Goodler, and if you click on that, it takes you to the wish list for things that we need, like socks and toiletries and whatnot. And they set it up through Amazon, and you go in and you make your purchase of whatever you want to buy, and then they fulfill that for us and send it to us and send a thank you to the donor and acknowledge, you know, and then we follow up as well. But it's a good way to get goods for people who prefer to give goods rather than money.
Right. And as far as money goes, is it transparent? Do we know where the money goes, or can people see that, or do they
Well, so we're fiscally sponsored, right? Yeah, you get a tax, you get an acknowledgement from us, but right now we're fiscally sponsored, which means that we are under the umbrella of a larger organization. They're called TIDES. They fiscally sponsor 160 nonprofit projects, which is what we are right now. We plan to roll out as our own 501c3, hopefully this year. And once we do that, you put your 1099s online, and essentially anybody can go through and take a look at, you know, where you've been using your monies. And we probably then will also create some user-friendly, like, infographics that show specifically where the funds are being used and how they're being used.
Yeah, people always like to know, I think, when they don't. Because there's so much, I call it compassion fatigue right now, because there's so many needy organizations,
yes.
And they're all great. You know, and they're all great, and you just, but you can't give to everybody, and so you have to.
No. Absolutely.
A number of years ago, I did a show, and there was this beautiful woman from England, and she was a grandma of five, and she started a nonprofit in Africa to help these kids go to school and find homes and feed them, and she took a truck up to, I think she went to Darfur, and she fed 1,000 people, and the Red Cross came. And they had a truck, and they fed 3 people. And
wow.
I said, how is it I can feed 1,000 people, and you can only feed 3 people? And I said, well, we can't afford to feed that. Well, of course, you
wow.
know, today.
Why would the Red Cross even
money.
Show up if all they can do is
I
feed
know.
3 people?
I know, exactly. And that was the whole point is, you know, you remember when in Haiti, you know, they took the money. People donated all that money, millions of dollars, for housing, and they decided to hold on to that money for whatever reason and not use
right.
it.
Right.
And so I think a lot of people are become more leery about because of these, you hear about these things, you know?
No, absolutely. I can completely understand. I mean, we work really hard to keep, you know, our overhead low. Like I make minimum wage and then I donate my salary back to the organization. So I'm not even making a salary from Lava May. We have a tiny 275 square foot office where our entire staff and all of our products that we store are in because, you know, to have a decent size office for my staff in San Francisco would probably be around $2,700 or $3,000 a month, and we pay $600 a month to keep that cost low. I mean, we're doing everything we can to squeeze as much out of our overhead costs that are reasonable so that we can dedicate what we do to the service that we're providing.
Well, I'd like to take Lava May on as one of the Good Radio Network's core projects, and we're going to keep you in mind and remember and remind folks to donate for showers, and I love the idea of that.
And thank you. Thank you so much. We're truly honored.
Well, you know, I just think you're absolutely amazing, and I just what you have come up with and created is phenomenal. It really is, and you're so special. And I just love it when you know creative people, you know, become inspired because everything is possible. And it's great. I love it. And
thank you,
and,
Frankie.
Yeah, I'm just blown away by it. And I know that you can replicate this. I know it,
yes.
it can be replicated. And
we agree. We think
amazing.
So too. And in the interim, if you're in San Francisco or if anyone's in San Francisco and would love to see the buses in action, our locations are on the front of our website where we provide service, and you're welcome to drop on by and see for yourself. Our guests actually really love when people come visit because they know that that usually means, oh, somebody's going to donate or somebody's going to post, and that leads to an opportunity. And so they're super gracious and completely understand, you know, people's desire to learn more and to see it firsthand.
Yeah, and keep making the videos because I think they're really powerful, and especially the stories from the people themselves who are showering. I think people really enjoy that and
yes.
engage with that. And
absolutely.
You know, when you put a face to a voice and a name or whatever, you think, yeah, I'm helping John have a shower today. And,
yes.
you know, I think you said that you were doing about 48 showers a day, something like that. And so the goal is how many showers a year?
So with each bus, 12,500 showers. So with four buses, that would be 50,000 showers a year.
And so would that translate that they could shower more often?
That is the goal, yes, to provide people more than one shower a week, yes.
Awesome.
And what about, are you, because I'd love to connect you if you're not, do you have a connection for like, toothbrushes and things like that?
We do not, and would love that.
Okay.
So many homeless individuals have lost their teeth because they can't keep up with their dental care. So toothbrushes and flossers would be great.
Well, I have a tooth fairy on my show. I'm going to introduce you to the tooth fairy, and I'll send you that separate email because I know that she would love to help. She's given
Wonderful.
Out over a million toothbrushes. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, cool.
That's great.
Cool. Is there any other need like that that we can help with?
Let me see. Some of the other sort of really valuable things, like I said, were socks. But, you know, obviously sort of these all-in-one body wash, shampoo things that people can use easily are great. And then, you know, wipes are really good. And I think for women who are on the street, it's probably the hardest because, you know, we have, you know, monthly issues that we have to deal with. Right. So tampons and sanitary pads are also very much appreciated.
Is the bus docked with that?
We go through, you know, cycles where somebody hears about it, sends us a bunch, and then we run out. And, yes, so, you know, I always feel like the more the merrier. And if we have to stack them in my garage at home, then we will, you know. But
what about,
we can
like,
use that.
Depends? Would that be helpful?
I'm sorry, repeat that?
Something like Depends.
Oh, Depends. You know, and not at this point. I mean, we are beginning to see the homeless population in San Francisco aging. But people's longevity on the street is not very promising. And so we haven't encountered sort of that kind of need yet. So I'd say not at this time. But sort of even really rich, like coconut butter body moisturizers, because people get things like eczema, really dry skin, and anything that would help keep their skin moist and from cracking, chapsticks, things like that.
Okay.
Find some manufacturers.
Okay, perfect. Denise, is there anything else that you would like to say to folks? We got another like couple minutes here. Again, you're at, you know, lavame.org.
Right. I would just say that the next time you shower, or whenever you shower, and can remember that showering is actually a luxury that we take for granted, because so many people, not just in the United States, but around the world, struggle to get clean every day and to truly be grateful. And also this idea about how we change the world, it doesn't have to be something huge. Stopping and recognizing another person as a human being, you know, looking a homeless person in the eyes and wishing them a nice day, or if they ask you for money, actually saying, sorry, I don't have any change with me today, or whatever it is, but acknowledging people, taking that small act can make such a difference in people's life. It's like throwing a pebble into a pond. You never know what the echo effect will be. And so, you know, I just say, start small, because you can affect great change with little acts of kindness.
Oh, I just had an idea. I'm an idea person, too. What about, maybe you've already done it, but is it possible that folks who specialize in cutting hair or barbering could come once a month and hold court somewhere and cut hair?
Yes, we do. We have a partner. She's got something called Sidewalk Salon. She's actually trying to raise funds to get a mobile unit together so she can follow us around everywhere we go. But right now, she's popping up on sidewalks, or we put her in our partner's space to do haircuts. And we're trying to set this up on a more regular basis. It's she's got a full-time job, so she's trying to coordinate this around, you know, her regular work. But haircuts
but
make a huge difference.
Volunteer, right?
Yes, well, exactly.
You might want to. Well,
yes.
Denise Sandoval from Lavame, we thank you so much for what you've done for the homeless and to inspire us here at the Good Radio Network, too, and all the folks who are listening. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Frankie. It was a pleasure.
And I hope that you get your four buses this year. I'm just so excited for you. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And wherever you are in the world, I thank you for listening. And if you've listened to the show and were inspired by it and want to give, please go to www.lavamae.org. Your time or your money. Thank you again. Take care and bye.